Oh, this is the day of the year that I really like. The day when, number one, it's Friday, and number two, I believe it's expected we're going to get into the 60s today. That would be for the first time all year.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like turning a corner. Here we got, lighter evenings because of daylight savings time.
First Friday after the new daylight savings conversion.
We've kind of turned a corner here, okay? That, yes, there will be spells of cold weather here and there, cold, wet weather between now and, well, late June. But we finally have turned the corner on we can have days like this, too. Little Irish jig. Yes, it would. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. On the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yes, later on we will talk about St. Patrick, some interesting history about him you might not know about, which, of course, I know about, which is why you want to be listening to the radio program of record. By the way, a little ways away from Ireland, in the land of Sweden, there was this teenage visionary named Greta, who tried to awaken our consciousness to the presence of a threat that was going to wipe out all of humanity, that, of course, being global warming. And when that name didn't quite fit, they changed it to climate change. Well, Greta,
this is all wrong.
Here you are. You've stolen my childhood. Anyway, Greta is in the news. Now, she's 20 years old now, no longer a little girl, but still very much the symbol of the climate change movement. She's now 20. And she's in the news not because of something she said or wrote, but because of something she deleted. She reportedly deleted a tweet from 2018 warning that, quote, climate change will wipe out all of humanity, close quote. Well, by when? By now. She said, if fossil fuel usage continued, we will be wiped out by 2023. She said this 5 years ago.
Well, why is she deleting? Yeah, why is she deleting this? She's got at least 6-7 more months to work with.
Yeah.
She could have waited until October, November, maybe December to delete the tweet.
How is she different from those people holding up signs saying, the world will end. The world will end tomorrow.
Yeah.
The end is near. For intellectual reinforcement, she was basing her tweet on a grim warning from a Harvard professor. So you know it's got to be correct.
Oh, yeah.
Of atmospheric chemistry. His name is James Anderson, who said that pollution, because of fossil fuels, is pushing the climate back 33 million years to an era where there were no ice caps at the North or South Pole.
Is this where I play the Land of the Lost theme from the 1970s, 1980s TV show?
5 years. Quote, the chance that there will be any permanent ice left in the Arctic after 2022 is essentially zero. Professor Anderson is quoted as saying at the University of Chicago while speaking there, again, 5 years ago. You know what we could be doing today, but I won't, because I don't want to drive you to distraction on what's going to be a nice, warmer than usual Friday, St. Patrick's Day, that you would otherwise be having, you know, a nice, pleasant day. I could be spending the entire 3 hours of today's program and the entire 3 hours of every program next week talking about the predictions made by global warming alarmists, the climate change lobby, showing how wrong they have been about virtually everything. Virtually every prediction that has been made by climate change activists in academia, in government, in the so-called NGO, non-government organizations, which means political groups funded by the government.
You can run, but you can't hide from climate change.
Elected politicians.
The time is up. Our house is on fire.
That's right. A nice measured, nuanced, mature outlook there from the governor. The news media, I could spend literally weeks talking about nothing but how wrong these people are, and they don't seem to care. I mean, this professor from Harvard, James Anderson, I tell you what, Phil, let's throw a Hail Mary on this. See if we can get Professor Anderson on the program for Monday or Tuesday of next week.
Talk about his 2018 prediction.
Yeah, and say, since obviously what you predicted didn't happen, we thought we would give you a chance to explain why you think it didn't happen. Because, after all, not only is oil not going away globally, oil production and oil, the burning of fossil fuels, has continued worldwide, globally. We are especially seeing now coal. Now they're burning more coal because they need to in Europe because, well, somebody blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. And so a reliable source of energy for Europe, which foolishly was importing oil from Russia because they gave up on their own nuclear, which is ironic because nuclear energy is carbon neutral. But they gave up on nuclear, and they gave up on their own fossil fuels, and they gave up on their own coal. So now they're going back to coal. Now they're going back to basics, if you will. And anyway, the point here being is you just can't find a movement that has been more wrong more often. And the reason why is that that movement is not based on science. It hasn't been based on science in over 20 years. It's based on ideology. It's based almost on religion. It's almost a religious-like movement, where if you disagree with them, they treat you the way a Muslim jihadist treats someone who's a Jew, as an infidel, as someone who is turning their back on accepted truths. In other words, reason and discussion and debate, evidence, facts, they don't really matter. That's why our friend Cliff Mass from the University of Washington, who I brought on this show for the first time, I think about 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I brought on Cliff Mass from the University of Washington because he was someone who was celebrated by the climate change lobby, and I wanted to bring in another point of view. I wanted to bring in a different perspective. And so I brought on Cliff Mass. Since that time, Cliff Mass, who continues to believe, because he's tethered to science, what he believed back then. He's updated his research, of course, because every good scientist does. But he refuses to go along with the storybook narrative that is increasingly apocalyptic. And, you know, you have Jay Inslee sounding like you just heard Philip Jay play that clip. You know, our house is on fire. No, it's not. Hush. And for that reason, Cliff Mass is, have you ever noticed when the Seattle Times does a story that's related to climate, they don't talk to the most credentialed and the best-selling weather and climate specialist in the Pacific Northwest. They ignore Cliff Mass. So do some of the TV stations, the public radio. They ignore the authority because he won't echo alarmism. He says they're being irresponsible. He says that's not what the science tells us. So, first of all, good for Cliff Mass, but this Greta Thunberg reaction, which is, oh, my God, I said that 5 years ago. Hurry, get rid of it, is just so typical of where that movement's from. You know, Al Gore said the North Pole would be melted, not just by now. It was supposed to have been melted almost 10 years ago, according to Al Gore. Oops. And, you know, the predictions go on and they continue to be incorrect. It is coming up here on 17 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now that a few days have passed, what was it that most accounted for the failure of the Silicon Valley Bank? Now, some people are saying, well, they bought, you know, bonds at the wrong time. And that was a contributing factor. And other people, mostly conservatives, say, ah, but the bank was too woke. You know, they're into ESG. They're into, you know, climate, virtue signaling. And, yeah, that played a part. But there's another reason that hasn't received quite as much attention. I'm going to tell you what it is later this hour. On the John Carlson Show, first, Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the Twitter 20 on, again, what will be a sunny and warm St. Patrick's Day this Friday, Talk Radio 570 KVI. And we're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you, Paul McCartney. I believe it's from Abbey Road, the Beatles. All right. Remember, we play hits from the 60s coming back from commercial breaks during the 6 o'clock hour. If there's a song you like, you can either email me. That's email at john@kvi.com. Or you know what else you can do? You can check out the new KVI app. Just go to the App Store, download the new KVI app. I did it on the air yesterday at 7:30 to show you how easy it is. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the KVI page on the app, you can send us a text. In fact, you can send us a voicemail message just by touching the right icon. We make it real easy for you. All right. With that said, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the Twitter world this morning?
Yeah, we're going to do the quick rewind to what it sounded like 3 years ago here in just a moment. The Twitter 20. Sponsored by the Muckleshoot Casino. All roads lead to Muckleshoot. Posted yesterday, a lot of people were showing this clip of the White House press briefings where they had the placard, the big sign in the background, 15 days to slow the spread. And here's what it sounded like. Again, this was 3 years ago yesterday.
3 years ago yesterday.
Going to start off with Fauci. Then you're going to hear Birx. Was her first name Doris? What was her first name?
Her name is Deborah Birx, B-I-R-X.
And then it's going to wind up with President Trump at the time in 2020. Here we go.
I just wanted to read. There's an answer to this.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Tony.
Well, there's Bert.
He was my mentor, she so I'm going to have to let him speak.
The small print here, it's really small print. In states with evidence of community transmission, bars, restaurants, food courts, gyms, and other indoor and outdoor venues where groups of people congregate should be closed.
Mr. President, are you telling governors in those states then to close all their restaurants?
Well,
their
we haven't said that yet.
So there was the context as of 3 years ago. Shut everything down, but we're not saying that yet. All righty.
Let's just say that both Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci are not looking good in hindsight.
Bingo. Yeah. Auburn Police Department threw out on their social media at Auburn WA Police, after several years, a multi-jurisdictional investigation led by the APD has closed millions of dollars worth of stolen property in a pawn shop scheme were recovered and returned to their rightful owners. The Auburn Police Department goes on to say, we'd like to give a big shout out to the Safeway Distribution Center for storing all the stolen items and allowing a place for businesses to come sort through stolen products, stolen merchandise. We'd also like to thank Fred Meyer Loss and Prevention, Home Depot, Lowe's, and various other businesses that were instrumental in the recovery of these stolen items.
Nice.
So the return of items ended up taking place last Thursday and Friday, but they just posted about that yesterday. But $1 million worth of stolen property returned to the people it was stolen from. And then I know March Madness is in full swing now after day one of the NCAA basketball tournament. A lot of bracket busters.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about President Biden's
University of Virginia, to win it all? University of Virginia got bounced in the first round by a, I hate to say this,
Furman,
a college I had not heard of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Furman College.
The Paladins. They have a cool mascot name. Not many other schools go with Paladins anymore.
Where are they from?
God, I'd have to check, actually. I don't know rightfully off the top of my head what state Furman is in.
Suddenly, I don't feel
hard
so
to cancel
dumb.
A paladin.
They come at you. So Bloomberg posted, President Joe Biden picks the University of Arizona to win the men's basketball tournament. He flipped the state of Arizona in the 2020 presidential election.
Yes.
And Arizona lost in the first round as a number two seed to number 15, number 15 seed Princeton. So I think that gets a rightful let's go Brandon here on as we enter day two of the NCAA basketball tournament for 2023.
Very good. All right. It is coming up here, 6:27. St. Patrick's Day. Who was St. Patrick? And what is his background? And why is he revered in Ireland? We'll tell you the real story of St. Patrick. And also, a Georgetown restaurant is closing after a recent burglary because it's the 12th time it's happened. Details ahead. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. The John Carlson Show this Friday, 17th day of March, and it's going to be, believe it or not, a warm one. The warmest day of the year so far, expected to be into the 60s. So how about that? All right. Let's start local here on the second half of the 6:30 hour. Some unfortunate news. Again, this is in the beleaguered Georgetown area of Seattle. Georgetown, largely industrial, but there's residential pockets of Georgetown as well. It is, of course, adjacent to Boeing. And they have been plagued with these drug-fueled RVs. I call them rolling drug dens. Homeless encampments, drug encampments, and the attendant crime and break-ins and burglaries. One restaurant owner said he's finally had enough after the 12th burglary of his restaurant. Here's Como Force Jackie Kent.
Andrew Lowe is replacing the locks at his Georgetown restaurant, something that's unfortunately become a pretty regular task. This time, surveillance footage shows a man dressed in a security uniform and another person breaking into Soto Chicken around 7 Wednesday morning.
They're professionals. They jimmied the lock, came in here, broke through my kitchen door too, just looking for stuff to steal. We've been broken into about a dozen times in the past 3-4 years now.
He says his small business can't afford to repair the thousands of dollars in damages.
We're all still just recovering from COVID, the pandemic, just struggling to make ends meet, and these sort of things just, you know, set us back so much.
Down the street, Cascade Columbia is dealing with a similar crime.
Besides the, you know, the graffiti and the trash and illegal dump and everything, we've actually had somebody, you know, try to cut into the fence in the last few weeks, trying to get inside of our facility.
It's near where crime ran rampant, including a shooting a year ago, stemming in part from an RV encampment that has since been cleared.
Okay. This is a sign that while things are getting better on the margins in some places, things continue to grow worse in others. I think I gave you the numbers of overdose deaths yesterday, where there had been almost 600 people in 2020 who were dead of drug overdoses, mostly by fentanyl. And then last year, it climbed to over 700, in 2021, it went from the 500s into the 700s. And last year, it topped 1,000. So even as you had a new administration, you know, Bruce Harrell, with an 18-point percentage point victory over his woke left-wing challenger, Lorena Gonzalez, we still see police officers leaving. We still see not just continuing death from drug overdoses, but a massive increase. It's like a 40% increase in a year from a previous 30% increase the year before. And we have the rampant crime. Again, you just heard 12 break-ins in about 4 years. That's one every 3 months. And he's finally done. My goodness, how did he hang in there for so long? And then we have this announcement from Amazon. Amazon is closing some of its Amazon Go locations. Now, Amazon Go stores are stores with no cashier. Quote, "We remain committed to the Amazon Go format. We operate more than 20 Amazon Go stores across America and will continue to learn which locations and features resonate most with customers." Its first cashierless store was opened in Seattle back in 2016, offering salads, sandwiches, and snacks for busy office workers seeking a meal on the run. Okay. The story from Bloomberg News said that Amazon is closing its Amazon Go locations in Seattle because so many people were working from home and weren't going to the office as often. Well, there's something to that. That is true. But two things here about this story kind of ring a discordant note to kind of stick out at me here. See if you catch it as well. The first is, yeah, it's true that a lot of people in the last couple of years have been working from home, but they're going back to work. They're starting to go back to work. So as more and more people are going back to the office, why would you pick that as the time to close your store when your customer base is beginning to appear? That's the first giveaway here. Here's the second tell. There's 20 of these stores in cities across the country, but they're only closing there were about 30, but they're closing 8 of them in just 3 cities. What are those 3 cities? Seattle, New York, and San Francisco. Why just those 3 cities? What do those 3 cities have in common? Number one, they have woke prosecutors who took a largely hands-off attitude toward what they called nonviolent crime, property crime. Number two, they had a hostile attitude toward police officers. And number three, they're getting increasingly dirty, grimy, and welcoming to drug users. So do you really think it's just the pandemic that explains why Amazon Go is closing locations in just these 3 cities? This is what happens. Again, as a sign of decline, the Amazon Go model might have been a little ahead of its time. And you've got to be strategic about where you put them. I don't know why you'd put a cashierless story, why you'd put a cashierless store in Seattle, a downtown Seattle. I don't know why you would do that. But I'm guessing now that Amazon is probably shaking its head, what were we thinking? But the Carlson mantra, if you want people to come and visit your store, your open, your tourist attractions, your public transit, if you want people to visit, then it's got to be clean and it's got to be safe, because there are clean and safe places for people to go. And they will go to those other places all the time. That's another reason why I think that Seattle has been one of the last cities, among all the cities that are sending people back to work. I think that that is a big factor in why Seattle office workers are in no hurry to return to work. There's an interesting story in the Seattle Times about how, we're beginning to see people come back to work, but not Monday through Friday. They're coming back to work on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But Monday and Friday are still largely vacant. The way the numbers work out is they say about 60% of downtown Seattle's workers were commuting. That's about 320. 60% of the city's 320,000 employees were commuting to jobs on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, which means that 4 out of 10 are in 2023, 4 out of 10 office workers in Seattle are still not going to work. They're still working from home 5 days a week. And a majority of office workers continue to work from home on Mondays and Fridays. Now, every employer, I was just hearing a young entrepreneur yesterday at a wonderful event from Washington Policy Center, said that you need to get people back into the office because offices, he said, a business is not a family. When a company says, we're a family here, no, they're not. They're a team. They're a team. And the team has to sometimes operate as one entity. People need to see each other. People need to talk to each other. Sometimes the most important meeting that happens is the conversation that takes place after the meeting. He said, you cannot have a company that operates productively if no one's around. And yet there's still this resistance, particularly when it comes to going downtown Seattle. Was this a 60s song, young Zach?
Well, it's 1969, but this is a listener request from Tom in Des Moines.
All right. There you go, Tom.
Tom was rolling with the green in Little Green Bag for the green theme of St. Patrick's Day.
This is the George Baker selection.
There we have it. Okay. Again, we play hits from the 60s. Coming back from commercial breaks during the 6 o'clock hour, email me, john@kvi.com. Got to see what our good buddy Lars Larson is thinking about this morning here on St. Patrick's Day. Being a Scandinavian, let's hope he's not culturally appropriating Irish traditions without permission.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, we're going to have to do it our own Swedish way. Although my mom's side of the family, the Mills side of the family, was English. So I guess we can just look down our nose at all the Irish.
Very good.
Not that I do. Not that I do. But John, it's First Amendment Friday. And of course, I think the two big issues of the week are the money laundry that we're finding out that Silicon Valley Bank was, yeah, and the fact that the reason they got the giant payoff, the bailout from Joe Biden, which all of his allies keep saying was not a bailout. Anytime you give somebody $156 billion to settle debts that are not the bank is not legally obligated to, and you say, oh, you know, the taxpayers and bank customers of America will be happy to pay that money, that's a bailout. And then you've got the fact that the Biden crime family just got bigger. We found out that apparently Hallie Biden is now part of the chain that was the money laundry of the Biden crime family.
Not many people have spent a lot of time on Hallie Biden. Hallie Biden, of course, was the wife and then the widow of Beau Biden, the attorney general who was actually, you know, the heir to Joe Biden's legacy, who died tragically of brain cancer. And then she somehow takes up with Hunter Biden. And she received $35,000, Lars?
Yep, from the Chinese communist deals that Hunter Biden cut.
So, again, that scandal continues to grow. Lars Larson has more details noon to 3. This day and every day of the work week on KVI. Oh, top of the morning to you on St. Patrick's Day, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 5 minutes after 8. It's going to be warm. It's going to be sunny. It's St. Patrick's Day and it's Friday. Oh, man. What a great way to greet the weekend. Welcome to the Commute with Carlson, the radio program of record. Okay, as you know, this being St. Patrick's Day, there's some things you might not know about St. Patrick. I'm going to take just un momento to tell you why he is the patron saint of Ireland. He wasn't born there. He was born in the 4th century, which means the 300s, late in the 300s. He was born in what was then called Roman Britain. Kidnapped as a 16-year-old teenager and taken to Ireland as a slave. He escaped captivity, but returned in the year about 432 to convert the Irish to Christianity. He died about 30 years later, but that 30-year period was very productive. He established monasteries. He established churches. He established schools. And for that, he's become beloved. You probably know the urban legend that he drove the snakes out of Ireland. I think what he actually did was he drove the lawyers out of Ireland, and somehow it got mistranslated. But anyway, put that aside. That's, again, not confirmed either way. Supposedly used the shamrock to explain the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Anyway, Ireland came to celebrate his day with religious services and feasts. It was people immigrating from Ireland to countries like the United States, who transformed St. Patrick's Day into a day of, well, revelry? I mean, there's still a religious component to it. But most of what we remember of St. Patrick's Day are the elaborate parades and the festive celebrations, especially at Irish pubs. Boston held the first St. Patrick's Day parade. You know when it was? 1737. 40 years, or almost 40 years, before the Declaration of Independence.
All right.
In 1776.
That puts things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. New York City followed in 1762. So this has been going on for a little while. Thought you would find that interesting. Now, let's get back to local stuff, okay? It's 8 minutes after eight. As you know, every day between now and the end of the legislative session, first segment of the 8 o'clock hour after the legislative hotline opens, and boy, are you having an impact, ladies and gentlemen, in KVI land. The legislative hotline takes your messages to your legislators on what to support and what to oppose. And it's been very productive. Randy Peppel from ShiftWa.org is our perennial guest between now and the end of session. We have him on the show all the time anyway because he hosts the best website about Washington state politics. It's called ShiftWa.org. That's Shift, W-A.org. Randy Peppel, good morning.
Good morning, John, and thank you for that history lesson on St. Patrick. Nah. Now I can get to my corned beef.
Yes. Now we can get to the important stuff. Exactly. So you will recall, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of months ago, the Federal Consumer Protection Agency was pondering whether or not they should make gas stoves illegal. Again, climate change issues. And they unfortunately did this publicly. And when word got out that Americans face the prospect of their gas stoves disappearing, there was such an immediate outcry that the White House instantly said, no, we're not thinking of doing this. Members of Congress, how dare you consider doing this? And the Consumer Protection Agency in question instantly said, no, we're not thinking about doing that. It was just being talked about. In other words, they said, for heaven's sakes, you know, as soon as the public got wind of what was going on, no, we're not going there. But they did want to go there. As soon as the outcry happened, they immediately backed off. But here in Olympia, Randy Peppel has discovered under House Bill 1589, they're not going to take your gas stove. They're just going to cut the feed. Or at least they'd like to. Randy Peppel, what's going on?
Well, John, the Democrats are intent on eliminating natural gas as an option for people in Washington state. I mean, let that sink in. The Democrats, and this is the proud majority party in the legislature, are wanting to stop all expansion of natural gas use in Washington state. And they put their money where their mouth is by passing House Bill 1589 2 weeks ago. And that bill tells Puget Sound Energy, which is the state's largest combined utility providing natural gas and electric service, that it cannot provide a new gas hookup after June 30th of this year. That's it. If you have a house that is getting built and on July 1 you want to have a gas hookup put in so that you can have natural gas in your home, the state of Washington is going to say no if the Democrats have their way and House Bill 1589 passes. It's being heard in the Senate Energy and Environment Committee today, John, and there needs to be an outcry.
Oh, my, yes.
Because and here's why. Not just because of the stupidity of banning natural gas hookups, but because what this is intended to do is make Puget Sound Energy a partner with Washington State in driving up your fuel prices in the future by protecting Puget Sound Energy. Because not only does this bill ban future new gas hookups, but it also guarantees PSE gets at least 60% of any new energy transmission that helps them replace natural gas. So basically, the government is saying, here, we're going to cut you in on the deal, Puget Sound Energy, and you're probably going to want to go along with whatever we say,
right? To buy your silence, we'll cut you in. It's like when they banned plastic grocery bags. They said, oh, don't worry, grocers. People will have to buy bags from now on, and instead of it being a tax, you get to keep the 8 cents a bag. So you'll do okay here. So, yes, sorry for the inconvenience, but you're going to make money every day.
We're going to cut you in, and it just makes you dependent.
Exactly.
And that's the entire reason for this. And as J.T. Wilcox, and you know J.T., I mean, the House of Representatives, leader of the Republicans in the House, he's a measured individual. He is not one of these flamethrowers.
No,
he
very low-key.
He tweeted out that this is the most poorly thought-out major bill I've ever seen. I mean, and for Representative Wilcox to step forward
that's
in that way shows you how bad it is.
Yeah, no, I know JT very well. We've had him on the show a bunch of times. That's saying a lot when he says something like that. You know, and the other thing that's ironic about this is, again, I don't know where the natural gas industry is while all this is going on, but natural gas is the cleanest of the fossil fuels. The transition from coal to natural gas over the last 10 years is the major contributor to America's having a lighter carbon footprint. We have about as much as deep a carbon footprint today as we had 10 years ago. You know, way more people, way bigger economy, but in terms of emissions, we're about where we were in 2012, 2013. The major factor has been the transition, largely because of fracking, to natural gas. And yet that's the fuel that is in the gun sights of the Democrats here.
That's because the Jay Inslee Democrats didn't approve of that fuel, John. You must not be paying attention. I mean, when Jay wrote his book a couple of decades ago that I think five different people have read, he did not talk about fracking and natural gas. He talked about wind and solar and photovoltaic fuel cells and the fact that American industry has come up with other ways to generate cleaner and less expensive energy. The government can't abide by that. That you need to do what they're saying. And that's why House Bill 1589 is so bad, because it takes the one player in this state that qualifies for this bill. This bill is all about Puget Sound Energy. and it makes them do what the government tells them to do in return.
Oh, it neuters them
for a nice slice of the pie.
Yeah,
and
for a nice slice of the pie. That's it. It neuters them. This is just a perfect example of, you know, we're going to neuter you, but we're going to take care of you.
And, you know, Kelly Chambers, Representative Chambers from Puyallup, put it most accurately, because the Democrats are always bragging about, hey, we're the first state to do this. So, you know, we're the first one to stop new natural gas hookups. And he said, quote, being first in the nation is great, but it's not free and it's definitely not cheap. And the Democrats don't care, John.
And I would tell Kelly,
it will cost you more.
Yeah.
But they don't care.
And I would tell Kelly, sometimes being first in the nation is not great. It means you're doing something idiotic.
Yeah, it means the first to be wrong, which, you know, we found out with the long term health care tax that the
other
Democrats
states have more sense than to do this. No,
exactly.
OK, so here's my other question, Randy Pepl. And while I'm asking Randy Pepl this question, I'm going to give you the legislative hotline number, 800-562-6000. Basically, they are coming after your gas stoves, starting by cutting the feed to new customers. They're going to cut the cord, so to speak, and not allow new residential or commercial building to include natural gas. Your message is very simple. Hands off natural gas. Hands off natural gas. House Bill 1589. Vote no. Now, this time you want to call your senator because it's already passed in the House. Right, Randy Pepl?
Correct. Correct. Okay. It's in the Senate now.
And it's due for committee action today, I believe. So
today at 8 a.m. We're talking about it as
they're talking about
the
it
most
too.
Rabid environmentalists in the state House are there over in the Senate saying, hey, here's why you need to pass this.
OK, so what your legislator needs, what your state senator needs to know is what you as a constituent think. And they need to know that you are saying, we know what you're up to. Hands off natural gas. Vote no on HB 1589. Again, vote no on HB 1589. Randy, we have one more minute, and I got to ask you, given the outcry against the attack on natural gas or natural gas stoves 2 months ago, why is the natural gas industry not standing up and fighting back in the public arena? The public's on their side.
John, I think you'd have to ask representatives of the gas industry that, but I think they are getting attacked on so many fronts. They're trying to deal with this at the national level,
right,
in the hopes that state laws like this will get wiped out after that. But that's a dangerous strategy. That's why
it is.
We're paying a quarter more for gas right now because of Inslee's cap and tax program, is because the oil industry let that go through thinking, oh, this will get taken care of at the national level.
Yeah, well, it's not. And again, you know, businesses need to have the courage of their convictions and understand that they're not going to get people to hate them a little less and to be more reasonable. They, instead of playing defense, the natural gas industry needs to launch a counteroffensive. What happened 2 months ago in D.C. with the natural gas stove controversy shows that. Launch a counteroffensive, for crying out loud. Get up and fight. Anyway, we want our listeners to fight. Call the legislative hotline, 800-562-6000, and tell your senator. And if you don't know your senator, don't worry. The operators can find out for you in seconds. Say no on HB 1589, hands off.
Vote no.
Natural gas, vote no on HB 1589. Randy Pepl, have a great St. Patrick's Day and a superb weekend. We'll talk again Monday.
And you as well. Thanks, John.
Back we are, the John Carlson Show. What the hey is going on? I tried to call the legislative hotline. Walk my talk here. Call that legislative hotline. If the lines are busy, please be patient. Again, 800-562-6000. Lots of KVI listeners apparently on the phones. So remember that. 800-562-6000. And that bill you want to tell your state senator to oppose is HB 1589. No on HB 1589. Hands off natural gas. All right. What on earth is going on here? The State Department of Natural Resources holding an art contest for kids, Philip J. VanVoort III?
Yes, the Twitter 20 sponsored by the Muckleshoot Casino. All roads lead to Muckleshoot. This morning I stumbled across this post from the Washington State Department of Natural Resources. Their tweet says, and they're going to give this scenario of you're a parent with a child and having a conversation about another child art project. So it goes, "That's beautiful, sweetheart. Your voice shakes as your kid hands you yet another work of macaroni art. Sweat pools on your brow. You haven't seen the surface of your fridge door in 4 years. You tried to wedge it between the handprint turkey and the pipe cleaner rainbow, but oops, you've accidentally knocked down the school art project that says mommy's favorite hobby is drinking wine. Your precious angel bursts into tears and your mind flashes forward to the tell-all they'll write someday about your failed parenting." And then in a third, that's the first two posts. And then the third post for the State Department of Natural Resources says, "Just when all hope seems lost, you remember the DNR is hosting an art contest for K-12 students. So kindergarten through 12th grade students, you remember that DNR has all sorts of space on its walls and website for art. You're crying now, too, but these are tears of relief, of hope for a brighter tomorrow." This is mission creep at its finest, but why on earth is the State Department of Natural Resources devoting time to an art contest for school students? This makes no sense.
Well, the other thing is just this whole narrative.
Cute, but makes no sense.
Thinking that they're edgy and cute and funny. You remember Saturday, or Almost Live used to have the lame list? Lame. Just lame. Little bit of Irish flavor to the programming today on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. You can go ahead and give us a shout on our new phone lines at 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. Remember, extra leeway latitude on your phone calls on the John Carlson Show on during the 8 o'clock hour. All right, a couple of things that I wanted us to make sure we had time to cover on the show. I want you to listen to this comment by Peggy Flanagan. Peggy Flanagan is the lieutenant governor of Minnesota. The governor, Governor Waltz of Minnesota, chose her as his running mate. You run as a ticket, which frankly makes some sense that, you know, the vice president doesn't run independent of the president, runs on a ticket. So why we independently elect a lieutenant governor, I'm not exactly sure. There was such a mistrust of the concentration of power that the state's founders decided to make it a separately elected office. Most states run as a ticket. Ours does not. But be that as it may, in Minnesota, Peggy Flanagan was a legislator, Native American, and also very much a left-wing political activist, very much part of the Paul Wellstone flank of the Democrat Farmer Labor Party there in Minnesota. She was talking about the governor's executive order on trans youth and allowing irreversible surgeries, including castration, including mastectomies, for under 18 youth who believe they are members of the opposite sex. Now, understand, liberals are forever telling us that young juvenile offenders and even young adult offenders should not receive adult-like sentences for vicious, violent crimes because their minds are not formed. This is actually case law from U.S. Supreme Court decisions that you can't give the death penalty to a juvenile, even if the juvenile is tried as an adult for an awful crime or series of crimes, because the assumption is that their minds just weren't formed enough to justify that kind of penalty. But apparently at age 15, they have the mental capacity to decide they don't want to grow up to be a woman. They're a man or non-binary, so slice off my breasts. Or a young man, a developing boy, decides that he wants to be female, so take it off down there. It's unbelievable to me that people under 18 can get this kind of surgeries, and in some states, without parental permission. So that's the backdrop here to this comment from Peggy Flanagan, the lieutenant governor of Minnesota. This tells you everything that is wrong in the country today with our political leadership.
To be clear, this is life-affirming and life-saving health care. When our children tell us who they are, it is our job as grown-ups to listen and to believe them. That's what it means to be a good parent.
No, it isn't. Because oftentimes a teenager, which I think most people, regardless of politics, regardless of income, regardless of whether you are a man or woman, most adults recognize that the teenage years are the most emotionally volatile, the most emotionally fraught years, where a kid can go from utterly depressed to completely euphoric, it seems, in a matter of seconds, where his or her lifetime decisions in January could be completely upended and they're going in a completely different direction by March, where there's immense curiosity and some experimentation, where depression is a real fact of life, and a lot of decisions made from the depths of teenage depression. So, no, it is not a parent's. See if we can isolate the last 10 seconds there, Philip J. It said, when our children tell us who they are, it is up to us to listen and to believe them. No, it's up to us to listen and then using our experience as parents who know and who love our children, and as parents who used to be teenage kids themselves once upon a time, to put things in perspective.
Who they are. It is our job as grown-ups to listen and to believe them. That's what it means to be a good parent.
No, that's what it means to be a doormat. To believe everything that your teenager tells you is not a sign of good parenting. It's a sign of brainless parenting. A sign that your kids know all? That you should take a back seat to what your kids are saying? Really? This is, again, I'm glad that she said that out loud, because it tells us everything we need to know about how the left sees the role of parents. Your job is to listen to what your 13-year-old tells you and to believe them. Not to say, no, no, you're going through a phase.
That's what it means to be a good parent.
That is the mentality of the political left. That age, experience, and being a mom or dad counts for nothing.
Whew, I would have loved to have
counts
that.
For nothing.
I would have loved to have that lady as my parent when I was growing up.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding?
I'm not going to sleep until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
You would have loved having her as your parent when you were a teenager. Yeah. But by the time you hit your late 20s, maybe even your mid-20s,
oh, sure.
You'd say, you know, come to think of it, maybe having some guardrails, maybe being told by your mom or dad, no, that's just not the right decision. No, you're not going. I don't like these people you're hanging out with.
Yeah.
No, this is a phase. No, that hairstyle makes you look idiotic.
I don't feel like going to school again today. Okay, you could stay home.
It's up to me to listen to you and to believe.
Watch cartoons, play video games.
But again, this call by the political left to indulge children, we see all around us in all sorts of manifestations. You know, I played you that audio of these Stanford University law students. Okay, so we're talking not about little kids. We're talking about young adults who are very intelligent and very successful so far in their lives. They made it to Stanford Law. Who are baying like and yelling like 4-year-olds in the grocery store having a temper tantrum on aisle number 5 because they didn't want a federal judge addressing other students at Stanford? And the Stanford administrator, the director of diversity, praises them for heckling and trying to prevent a federal judge from speaking at a law school. She praises them. And then she turns around and hectors the federal judge for 6 full minutes before praising the students for disrupting, not dissenting, not discussing, not debating, but disrupting the event. Again, this is just the sum total of what happens when you indulge young people instead of raise young people. And again, these remarks from this lieutenant governor just tell you everything that is wrong with the political left in this country today. It is coming up here on 8:47, the John Carlson Show. Still to come, we've been told time after time by the Department of Homeland Security Director Alejandro Mayorkas, that we have operational control of our southern border, which means no one can get in that we don't want getting in. That's what operational control, it's in writing, that's what it means. He was contradicted yesterday, not by a Republican congressman, but by his own Border Patrol chief. We've got that clip for you. And earlier this week, we talked about the accomplishments and the death of Dick Fosbury, who transformed the sport of high jump by changing how he jumped. And everybody else who's been successful has pretty much followed his lead. Anyway, there's some things about his life. He's a Northwest native, grew up in Oregon and settled in Idaho. There's some things about his life that you need to know that are valuable lessons for the future as well. You'll hear that and more coming your way on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Glad you've let me be part of your St. Patrick's Day. We're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. A little update for you. We had Randy Pepple on talking about this terrible bill, House Bill 1589, which basically declares war on the cleanest fossil fuel we have, natural gas. And it would prevent any additional gas hookups in any home or any store or any office building starting this June. Again, just a declaration of war on natural gas. And you wait. It's only going to be a matter of time before they come for existing natural gas. So I am hoping that right now they are conducting a committee hearing, not a floor vote. It's just in committee. But this bill, 1589, has passed the House. It is in committee in the Senate. And following today's committee hearing, it will probably be on the Senate floor. So we have time for your senator to hear from you. And you want to notify your senator, no on HB 1589. That's no on HB 1589, hands off natural gas. Leave natural gas alone. No on HB 1589.
My stove, my choice.
Yes, well, not if they have their way. It's your stove, their choice. They would prefer a wood-burning stove, which is much more, in terms of carbon footprint and emissions, far more polluting than a natural gas stove. But they're at war with natural gas. So, again, no on HB 1589. Hands off natural gas. Now, if you're calling and it's busy, don't worry. The lines will eventually clear and then call. I've called. I called to do what I'm advising you to do. Tell my senators, vote no, HB 1589. So don't worry if it's busy. We've got some time to fight this terrible bill. The vote was closer than they thought it was going to be in the House. So there's a chance that it could get snared in the Senate. But let's all get behind the opposition to 1589. That legislative hotline number again, 800-562-6000. That's 800-562-6000. The border, according to the Department of Homeland Security, the southern border is secure. In fact, you're going to hear Alejandro Mayorkas, the utterly inept head of Homeland Security, say so. But at a congressional hearing earlier this week, Republican Congressman Mark Green asked not the head of Homeland Security, but the guy who's down there, the head of the Border Patrol, Raul Ortiz, whether he agreed with that assessment. The border chief was under oath, so he had to tell the truth. Have a listen.
Chief Ortiz, does DHS have operational control of our entire border?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'd like to share it with the American people. This is the actual definition of operational control that is in the code, written into the code well before I came to Congress, the definition. And I appreciate the honesty of Chief Ortiz. Do you think that, let's play a video clip here. I just want to share this question. Will you testify under oath right now? Do we have operational control? Yes or no?
Yes, we do.
And we have operational control of the borders.
Yes, we do. And
that is that was Congressman Chip Roy asking Alejandro Mayorkas whether we have operational control. And Mayorkas said under oath twice, oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. And the obvious answer is no, like hell we do. No, we don't. So Congressman Green continues.
4.7 million alien encounters, 1.3 million gotaways, a record number of individuals on the terrorist watch list, a record number of criminal alien encounters, a record number of aliens with gang affiliation encounters, a record number of drug seizures. Do these numbers project confidence to the American people that DHS has operational control?
I will tell you, I have confidence in the men and women that are executing the mission out there to the best of their ability.
Now, I appreciate
that. We've seen across the southwest border 9 sectors, and out of those 9 sectors, 4 of them have significant resources. When you think about the double layer fencing, some of the surveillance technology, and then the amount of agents we deployed. But in 5 of those 9 southwest border sectors, we have seen an increase in flow.
So we have control over part of the southern border, and he explains why. Because we have fencing, we have a wall, we have adequate security. But in 5 of the sectors, no, we do not. And some of them are practically wide open. So thank you for that. Real quick, phones open on the John Carlson Show. Here's Warren from Stanwood up there near Camino Island. Go ahead, Warren.
Hey, John. Good morning. Hey, I worked for Puget Sound Energy and Washington Natural Gas for 40 years. And this legislation is just so absurd and stupid. It just is beyond belief.
Yeah.
If there was a massive power outage like we experienced in 2006, I was in the phone center and I was helping people head gas water heaters, head gas fireplaces, mm-hmm. turn them on, get them working so they would have another source of heat. We had a third of our entire system destroyed in 2006. And the impact of this bill on not only the propane industry, the natural gas industry, right. all of the installers, all the people who sell the product, it has just, it's so far-reaching, it's incredible. And just for the people's awareness, wood smoke is the second leading carcinogen behind
right.
diesel.
Yeah, that's what they prefer. They prefer wood-burning stoves to natural gas stoves. It's just incredible. Warren, great. You're why I love talk radio, because people with real authority, you know, local knowledge is the best knowledge. People who are right there on the front lines can see through this nonsense in Olympia. Thank you very much. Again, that bill that declares war on natural gas is House Bill HB 1589. You want to call and tell your senator. The House already voted, so don't waste time there. Tell your senator no on HB 1589. And again, that number is 800-562-6000. It's in committee right now as I speak to you, and then it will soon be on the Senate floor. And we want to make sure they hear from KVI listeners and your friends and your neighbors and everyone else who will take your phone calls. Okay. I want to finish the program by telling you a little more about the life of Dick Fosbury. Dick Fosbury, famous as an Olympic high jumper for what was called the Fosbury flop in a new way of high jumping in 1968, which ended up transforming the sport entirely. Every world record since then has been set, or Olympic record has been set, by someone who now emulates the Fosbury flop. Dick Fosbury, it's amazing. When he was born in Portland, his dad drove a logging truck. His mom was a teacher. He grew up in Medford. He could not make the high school football team. He could not make the basketball team, even though he was tall and gangly. So he joined the track team and tried to be a high jumper. He was the worst high jumper on his track team. He used what was then one of the two ways of high jumping, the scissors kick, and it didn't work. So one day, Fosbury, who became a civil engineering student, decided to experiment with something entirely different, and that is going over the high jump bar backwards. And he said, and it worked. He improved his personal best by an entire foot. And then as he began training harder, he began realizing he was onto something, and he began clearing the high jump bar by leaps and bounds, so to speak. He said, when you reach the elite level on the high jump, going over the bar at those high levels, you feel like you're flying. Anyway, he graduated from Oregon State University, but made the Olympic team. And again, people were just marveled in 1968 watching the Olympics. This guy who was unlike anyone else, went over the bar backwards. Transformed, changed the state, moved to Idaho, became a zoning commissioner in Blaine County, Idaho, and served as vice president of the U.S. Olympic Committee. So just thought you'd want to know a little bit more about the life and times of Dick Fosbury here on Talk Radio 570 KVI Seattle, KPLZ HD3 Seattle. Want you to go out and have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day weekend. Boy, it's going to be a beautiful day today, one of the best days of the year so far. Got Ari Hoffman, 3 to 6, Lars Larson, noon to 3. And right now, it's Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins.